Rolene Marks joining us from Israel for the Israel Report. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, and I'm always stronger and better when I hear such wise words of wisdom.
Absolutely, absolutely right. Talking about COVID, what is the latest situation in Israel?
Well, we do have a situation where the numbers have gone up quite astronomically over the last week, and some stats being reported. The majority of serious cases and people being hospitalized are those that have not been vaccinated. We do still have a big part of the population that hasn't been vaccinated, about a million or so people. Some parents are very reluctant to vaccinate their children.
Right, that's what I wanted to ask.
A third of the Arab community has not been vaccinated.
Why is that? Is that an anti-vax thing? Is it just a maybe apathy? Why aren't people getting vaccinated?
There is a lot of anti-vax rhetoric about people thinking that having to have a vaccine infringes on their personal freedoms. I mean, I've been fully Pfizered and I'm waiting to book my third shot, and I can quite happily tell you that my DNA has not been altered. I thought I would be taller. Sadly, Howard, that has not happened.
Still relying on those heels. Yep, I get
still
it.
Still relying on my heels. Nobody from Big Tech has communicated with me through some strange mechanism. You know, none of this is happening. But I think, you know, we're always going to have those who feel that they have to be belligerent against what they see as the system. So massive efforts underway by the government to try and clamp down on anti-vaxxers and also to educate them. We have had tightened restrictions with having to use your green pass. Those that have been double vaxxed and in some cases triple vaxxed don't have an issue with having to show the green passport to enter events, to book at the gym, to go certain places. There are some debates happening between the health minister and the Ministry of Health whether or not they should be vaccinating at schools. Big discussions because, of course, in a couple of weeks, schools are due to go back. And notification early this morning that 50s and over can now book their third jabby. So, you know, we're rolling out those third booster shots. Some of the data we have in is that it is a positive that the rate of infections amongst people over 60 who have had that third booster, the infections are coming down. But, hopefully we'll be able to see those numbers coming down pretty soon. They reckon in about a week or so we should see the effects of the third shot. And of course the good news for South Africans is that you've moved from the red list to the orange list.
That is very, very good news indeed for us. It is 7:48. Just looking at some of the messages, we were talking about that bank robber, shame, who was arrested because they couldn't read his note. It was just such a sad situation. 67 years old. They couldn't read his notes. He left empty-handed. He was then arrested for 4 years. Stephen wants to know, if he spends a spell in jail, will he be eligible for parole? Sorry, I just had to interrupt the Israel Report for that because I thought that was actually very, very funny. All right, Rolene, moving on to more serious things. And that is a Human Rights Watch talking or accusing Hamas of war crimes. This is a turnaround.
It's a half a turn, and I'll tell you why. Because, okay, you know, when it comes to castigating Israel, and don't worry, for all of you watching Ken Roth on Twitter, he has gone back to his evil ways. I mean, he's now, his latest tweet out is that American Jews are losing the connection to Israel, and he trots out, of course, a picture of Naturé Carter. Mm. And that is a discussion that we do need to have. But Human Rights Watch have literally released a one-pager where they accuse Palestinian armed groups of war crimes, then firing their rockets and mortars at Israeli cities. What they neglect to mention in this report, and I've fact you've got it in front of me, you can download it off the Human Rights Watch site, is the firing of rockets and projectiles from within civilian civilian infrastructure. We've had the issue with UNRWA this week where tunnels were discovered under their schools, and the UN wanted to send in inspectors, and Hamas prohibited those inspectors from coming in to see whether or not there were still unexploded weapons hidden beneath and what kind of threat these tunnels posed to schoolgoers and, of course, the infrastructure there. This is basically from, and this is my opinion, this is a one-pager saying, well, you know, just in case anybody accuses us of bias, we can't say
they're just covering themselves is what you're saying.
They're covering themselves. There's no mention about the use of civilians as human shields. And the rhetoric and invective that leads up to these kind of events and the kind of ideology that we are dealing with, you know, that is conveniently missing. They have spoken about the rockets that have been misfired or falling short that have killed at least 7 Palestinians and injured 15. This is according to their report. According to other reports, there are more. And they're very careful not to use the terminology terror group. They use the terminology armed groups. Groups, and I know it's unpopular in South Africa media, and I'm always told, please refer to them as extremist groups.
Or no, they're terrorists.
Groups. These are terrorists.
Absolutely.
They're designated and recognized internationally.
We don't need to be dictated to by other people's hijacking of a word.
Well, thank you for that, because that is important. Mm. That is very, very important. You know, these are groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, increasing day by day, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, are recognized internationally as terror groups. Mm. I'm sorry if that makes some in the South African media feel uncomfortable, but that's the situation it stands. And Human Rights Watch are very, very careful to skirt around this issue, calling them armed groups. So we have this fact sheet, which I've read through, and it's really... to me, it's a cop-out. It's an excuse just to say, look, you can't accuse us of flagrant bias. We have released this report. Well, it's not a report. Mm. This requires a lot more in-depth research, and I would also like seeing that Ken Roth trots out at every convenient moment the situation for Palestinians in Gaza. I would like him to talk about the PTSD suffered by Israelis, especially our children. Kenny, if you're listening, I'd like to take you to some of our rocket-proof daycare centers and communities around the Gaza periphery so that you can understand what those civilians live with every single day.
Absolutely right. Whilst this is happening, Israel is furthering relationships with many countries. And of course, this week was Morocco's turn.
Well, isn't it just stunning? Next week we celebrate 1 year since the signing of the Abraham Accords.
I can't believe it's a year. I would have said it's 3 months ago. This COVID has messed us up time-wise. I don't know what anything is anymore.
Absolutely. But what do you get for, countries making friends? What is the anniversary gift? I mean, in this case with the UAE, it's massive deals. It's deals in the hundreds of millions. So, you know, what is your first year anniversary gift? I think it is paper. Right. And in this case, the paper is
that was already
very,
signed.
Very fruitful. It's been signed. It's been absolutely incredible. But yeah, this week was Morocco's turn, and the Foreign Minister, Yair Lapid, hopping on that direct flight off to Rabat, opening a liaison office there. And yesterday, the incredible news coming both from him and the Moroccan Foreign Minister, saying that within at least 2 months, we will be upgrading these liaison offices to full diplomatic missions in both countries. Incredible news. And then he will be at the Beit Knesset Beit El, in Casablanca, the Shul, the Beit El Shul, a wonderful, thriving community in Morocco. You asked me earlier, what is the relationship like? There is a Jewish community in Morocco, one that enjoys the protection and a good relationship with the King of Morocco. The King has been invited by our President Isaac Herzog to visit Israel. Also, just that cementing of strong ties between these two countries. So we really are seeing an incredible escalation and building of ties, the signing of frameworks of agreements, a joint presser with the two foreign ministers, the foreign minister of Morocco saying, we want a two-state solution, 1967 lines, but being very, very careful not to choose one side over the other, saying that both Palestinians and Israelis need to rebuild trust and confidence in each other. So very, very positive week.
What is the history of Jews in Morocco? Because there was quite a significant community there, wasn't there?
There was significant community. In fact, Morocco was one of the first countries where Jews expelled from Spain, Portugal, those areas in the Middle Ages found refuge in Morocco, and over the years the community thrived. Sometimes there were times where there was persecution and that horrible situation following the establishment of the State of Israel, where Moroccan Jews, like the 850,000 Jews from Arab and countries and North Africa, had to leave those countries, and many came to Israel. In fact, over a million Israelis trace their roots back to Morocco. So, of course, it's very, very moving and very, very emotional for Israelis today to now be able to travel directly to Morocco to explore their roots and to explore their heritage. I mean, you only have to walk around Israeli markets, malls, food stalls to see the influence of Moroccan food, Moroccan culture very much celebrated here in Israel. And of course, couscous has become a part of our national diet.
Moroccan? Who knew? Wow. I thought it was just from kosher world. So absolutely fascinating. We don't have a lot of time, but the one thing that you mentioned that you wanted to bring up, and it's actually quite fascinating, because I wrote an article this week about people, a knee-jerk reaction, people making aliyah because of fear. You said that's so interesting. You wanted to raise this as a conversation because people need to understand it's not as simple as they think. And when I was chatting to Kathy Kayla, it turns out that her community show at 9 o'clock today is focused on this exact issue. She's going to be speaking to Liat Amar, Aran from the Israel Center, about Aliyah, looking at all of the aspects of it. But so we don't have a lot of time to talk about it now. You can get a full hour of that later. But Rolene, just give me your very brief overview and thoughts around this.
Well, look, as you all know, I am a Ola Vatika, and I think that, when you make this decision, and it's a massive decision, this is what people have to understand. You can't treat it as a panacea for a difficult situation back in South Africa, because you're going to come to Israel, you're going to make Aliyah, and while it is wonderful in many ways, you are going to face massive challenges. I'm going to give it to you honest, as somebody who's made Aliyah. And when you make this decision, you have to consider it very, very carefully. Right now, as we go through the global pandemic, you have to consider it very carefully from a financial perspective. If you're thinking about making Aliyah during this time, you're coming in extraordinary circumstances where the job market, all of this, is not as easy as it perhaps was before. You have to think about the life that you want to create. You have to understand that by making Aliyah, which you have to treat like immigration, you could be taking major steps back in your lifestyle, in your career. I want to be honest. In many ways, it's wonderful you're living in the Jewish country. Mm, you're fulfilling your Zionist dream, although the Zionist dream is not going to fill your trolley in the supermarket and pay for it. And yes, you do get a very much short-lived benefits financially. You have to consider it very carefully.